Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Bomer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using goldstar.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday, and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews, and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. When he was first approached with the idea to audition for Henry Higgins in the Broadway production of My Fair Lady, he hesitated, being certain he would do all that work and it would go to someone older or more famous. Well, it did not go to someone older or more famous, and it is my pleasure to welcome the Tony-nominated actor Harry Haddon Payton to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is the Tony Award-nominated actor, Harry Haddon Payton.
Very
Harry,
good.
Is that right?
That's
don't,
right.
Don't
that's
think
right.
I didn't practice.
No, that's very good.
Times. Can you say your slate your name?
Harry Haddon Payton.
There you go.
There you go.
Harry's currently starring as Henry Higgins in the Broadway production of My Fair Lady at Lincoln Center Theater. He has performed in many productions on the West End and off West End. Some highlights include The Importance of Being Earnest, Flare Path, The Pride, and She Stoops to Conquer. He's had an extraordinary film career, including roles in La Vie en Rose and The Deep Blue Sea. Just some of his television credits include Downton Abbey, The Crown, and Versailles. He is married to actress Rebecca Knight. Little known fact, he's the godson of Sarah, Duchess of York.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I am just thrilled to welcome, say your name again.
Harry Haddon Payton.
To the podcast.
There we go.
My work is done. Once I said your name correctly and you confirmed it, I feel relaxed.
Yeah, you can chill out now.
Yeah.
I have to tell people it's ham and bacon. That's how they remember.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
It's really good. What are those like Cockney slang, like prison terms? It's like...
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like that.
It's that. Your exactly.
name, in prison.
It's Cockney rhyming slang. Yeah.
In prison, your name means like something terrible.
But exactly.
But in real life, it means Tony nominated and many awards given and many nominations happening
yeah.
for your work. Kind of in a short period of time, you're not that old a guy. You're kind of a young guy.
Thank you.
Do you want to go
it's
now?
It's not how I feel right
it's
now.
It's all good. I know. You must be exhausted. It's ridiculous. Musicals are ridiculous in terms of what they ask
No one
people.
Told me. Yeah.
I know. Well, let's jump in right there because we could talk about how I was sobbing last night watching the final episode of Downton again just to remember Birdie. We could start with that, or we could start with your remarkable performance in My Fair Lady. That really is, from all I can see on your resume, like your first musical on Broadway. Maybe your first musical?
That's right.
As a grown-up actor?
It's my first musical as a grown-up.
Well done. You.
I did do some as not a grown-up.
Right.
Like at college and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is the first one. And I've been sort of, it's been on my radar. I've wanted to do one. I was a choir boy as a child. And when my voice broke, I wanted to be Freddie Mercury. And that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. You just ended up doing this.
I just chose to do the acting instead of the singing for a bit.
And you might become Freddie Mercury later.
Yeah, right?
Maybe
that's
today.
That's still my dream.
Do you know Julian Ovenden?
Yeah.
So he's my other British actor guest. And it's sort of interesting kind of talking about what it is to do a musical on the West End and what it is to do musicals here. Were you shocked by the insane fandom around musical theater once you did one on Broadway?
Yeah. I mean, so it's even more probably acute for me because I'm just going from straight plays on the West End to a musical on Broadway.
Yeah.
And the level of fandom, as you said, there are people dressing up.
It's cosplay at the stage door.
The cosplay, yeah, which is fun.
Are they dressed up in the audience if you look
There's
out?
Occasionally an Audrey Hepburn on the front row with a tiara. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
And an Elphaba from Wicked in green, like also from show to show.
Yeah, good. You got the wrong show, love.
Exactly.
It's mad. What I've learned being here is just the love of theater in general is amazing. And it feels like the first time I ever went up to the Edinburgh Festival, you know, where you're in a place where every single person you come across loves theatre.
Yeah.
And that's what really sparked my enthusiasm for it. And
did you do that festival as a, like, sort of during your university?
During college. So I did 4 years of French and Spanish languages, including phonetics.
Really?
Which was handy.
Hilarious.
Up north.
Do you see? You never know. These things we do that we think, well, now I'm an actor. What was the use of that?
I know.
You are now Henry Higgins.
And my first job was a French film, the La Vie en Rose.
That's right.
Which I would never have got if I hadn't, you know, in my eyes, wasted 4 years at university. But
of your parents' money.
In fact, their money. But in fact, I was doing a lot of plays and learning a language. And that's basically all I was doing.
So let's back up a little bit because we've buried the lead. You were nominated for a Tony for your first Broadway show in New York, a musical, which you hadn't done before, playing Henry Higgins, kind of the most, you know, a very coveted role that probably many famous people were also hovering around, and you got it. So we're gonna circle later in this episode. We're gonna get back to all of that
because
it's amazing. But there was a life before that we on this side of the pond may not know as much about because you've been mostly in England. So you mentioned being in choirs until your voice broke when you were growing up. Where did you grow up, by the way?
I grew up just outside of London.
Okay.
In the middle of the countryside, in Woodland.
And is that horses? And what's like the day?
There was a bit of horses. It was making camps for me. I had three younger sisters who weren't that interested in football. Soccer, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll have a glossary of terms that we put on the internet.
When I'm getting better at it, but occasionally one slips out.
Dude, you're doing great.
Good. Cool, man. So, and then I was whisked off to boarding school when I was 8, which I loved because suddenly there were other boys to play with.
And that was a family tradition.
Yeah, yeah. And I was sent to an amazing place and made loads of friends and was just kept active all day. And that's how I got into a choir there and soon realized I was louder than anyone else, which was kind
in
of...
In all ways.
Yeah, it was weird. No, but just singing.
Mostly
I was an alto that could just belt. And that we didn't, frankly, need any other altos. And that's how I got sort of enthused about singing.
So sometimes when I talk to actors, male actors, there's like this thing, well, you know, there were the jocks and then there were those of us who were doing choir and there was sort of conversations around that. Did you feel like, you know, there's Sporty Spice and there's not Sporty Spice? So that's an English reference for Spice Girls. They're a British group. Love every one of them.
Yeah.
Was there anything to being in a choir at that boarding school, or was that totally normal and no stigma attached?
It was a bit geeky.
Okay.
But I was very much an all-rounders, and actually I was in all the sports teams as well.
So you were the kid who could
prefect.
Do both.
I was kind of, it's irritating like that. But the jock side of me outweighed the singing, and eventually I chose the jock side.
Okay.
It's a bigger school.
Mm-hmm.
When I had the choice of going on a football tour or a choir tour, I took the football tour.
Okay.
Soccer tour.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Speak English, man. This is frustrating. Let's start again.
Language.
What's your
professor.
Name? Yeah. So.
So there was, you're right. But I managed to straddle all areas.
And were you guys performing and kind of like doing special choir concerts outside of the school?
Yeah, we went to France. We did a tour of France. And I was a sort of the alto soloist. And
so you were getting positive feedback for this
thing.
That's
right. I was getting a lot of encouragement and reassurance.
And are you acting yet or doing plays or musicals or is it just
concerts? So I was
concert?
Doing that as well. I was getting the leads in we did my first musical was a light opera called Les Bavardes by Jacques Offenbach.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
I love him. I was listening on my, playlist this morning. It was all him.
Yeah, he's amazing. Witty, I mean.
Amazing.
And I got a lot of encouragement for that. And then I went to bigger school and kind of chose the jock route, really.
When you say that, because the American school system and the English school system is different. So
I was 14 when I went to.
And is that the equivalent of high school here?
I guess so. Yeah.
And also boarding school.
Also boarding school. And again, I tried to do a bit of everything. And I did, there were odd drama competitions that I did. And then in the final year, during my final exams to get into college, I was Hamlet. They gave me Hamlet. So I did that.
And you must...
Then didn't get to the college I wanted to go to, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And
is that your introduction to Shakespeare, both as a student and as an actor?
Yeah. So I saw... we were amazing, had an amazing teacher who got us to read it aloud in class. And I soon realized this was something I could do. Mm-hmm. And so my hand was going up every class.
Right.
And he let me do all the roles, except he did Shylock. He wouldn't.
Happen outside this school for me, but in this school, I'm Shylock.
I'm Shylock. And he nailed it, give him his due.
Okay,
but
good. Pacino did a pretty good job.
He was pretty good.
On Broadway, but nothing compared to your professor.
No. Mr. Broad.
Let's give Mr. Broad a shout out.
Yeah, high five, Mr. Broad. But he helped me and encouraged me, and then I did Hamlet. And
was he like the first, when you look back at like a grown-up who wasn't in your family, saying, I think you have something? Or was it more in this school you just got cast and not so much talking about bigger picture?
So I guess the performing side of things happened when I was a bit with the choir.
Mm-hmm.
They thought I was encouraged in that way.
And like to be an opera singer or to do musical theater
I don't know. Like I wanted to be cool as well. That was
sure.
I put way too much emphasis on being cool. So I had a band.
In school,
a high school band and even a high school boy band that was kind of, it was a mock boy band.
Meaning?
We were kind of taking the mickey out of ourselves.
Okay.
It was called Spunk.
But like Spinal Tap? Ish?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
But not as clever.
Not as clever, but you were in
on
the
joke. We were just
joke.
Having fun.
Right. And like pretending to be a certain kind of band.
Exactly. And I was the only one taking it seriously.
Like the singing. You're like, this may be, we're joking around, but I'm going to sing beautifully.
Let's work the harmonies again. Yeah.
And are you doing covers? Are you writing?
Yeah, covers.
Of?
And I've wrote a couple, but covers of like Backstreet Boys and Five and Cotton Eye Joe, Red, you know, like...
A lot of
tongue
musical
in
influences
a lot
coming
of
in here.
Yeah.
But you're like getting some attention for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
How come? How did that happen? Like, there's no YouTube yet. There's no...
No.
So, I mean, it's
from
so
doing
putting
concerts,
flyers
we put
on.
We put on concerts at school and then at girls' schools, and that helps with confidence. And
but you're pretty young to be, like, fronting a band and making it happen, and you were ambitious for your...
Yeah, I guess.
For spunk?
I guess. We were, I guess...
Did you say spunk?
Spunk, yeah.
Great.
When we performed at school, they didn't let us call it spunk. We had to change the name, and they made us call it squirt instead, which is, you know, worse.
They were not in on the joke.
I'm sitting. No,
they didn't get it.
They didn't get it. But it helped. It helped the buzz around spunk squirt.
Right. This is all disgusting.
Sorry. Yeah. Let's move on.
No, but this is kind of a major thing. Like, you are performing, you're creating this band, you're having a great time. Mm. People are showing up and you're feeling what it is to, like, be the star of something.
Yeah.
And you like it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And then I go to college, university. And so in the first week I auditioned for, my first ever audition was for West Side Story. And the guy who went on to be my best friend was cast as Tony. And I was...
You mean in real life?
In real life. And I was Riff. And we're now godparents to each other. And
are you listening? Like, when you were growing up, were you, when I kind of deep dived a little bit into the world of you on Google, your father was a military person.
Yeah, yeah.
So is there anyone, like, are you listening to West Side Story in your house growing up? Are there cast recordings? Like, what's your introduction to musicals?
They, so my parents kind of were born at the wrong time in terms of following their hearts.
Right.
My father was a military man, but he wanted to be an opera singer. He has a voice. But
Your parents still alive?
Yeah, they're
still
around.
So they're
around.
Seeing
and still
you
together. Yeah.
Do their dream in a way, or his dream in a way.
See, he wanted to be an opera singer and she wanted to go to RADA. And both sides of parents said, absolutely not. That's not an option for you. So when it was my turn, they let me. But I would listen endlessly to the Three Tenors, you know, that concert they did.
Sure. I can see the cover of that album in my mind.
I just bought it recently and showed it on a huge screen to my children.
That's so funny.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
And they would take me to shows.
Like, you'd go to the West End.
We would drive up to London, and that would be what I wanted to do on my... I can't remember whether I asked for it or whether they made me do it, but that's what I happened to do on my birthday.
Like, for a special occasion, that's how you wanted to celebrate.
They would take me, and I remember seeing Starlight Express a few times. We saw Cats, and we saw Joseph, and we saw all the Lloyd Webber stuff.
Right.
More than once. And I knew a pianist, or my dad knew a guy who played the piano in Greece.
On the West End?
In the West End.
Okay.
And
did it run forever? Was it one of those shows?
It ran for a long time.
Yeah.
And he would get me in stage door and put me in a box, and I would sit and watch that.
How random.
Which is amazing.
How
and I love those.
Know this guy? Who knows?
He knows a lot of people. And I met...
I bet he does.
He does, weirdly. Yeah.
Well, is that why, I mean, just as a weird... You know, we're obsessed with the royal family over here, or many of us are, because we don't have that, right?
No.
Like, there's no... I mean, since maybe the Kennedy family has taken on that sort of place in our hearts and in our... culture.
Yeah.
But if you are the godson of Sarah, who is so beloved over here, obviously, are you related to the royal family, or were these friendships or?
No. So I was related to Fergie. She's my godmother from when my mother worked with her. Like, we're friends, we're mates, age 17, you know, worked in a shop and just sold jeans. And
so your mother's friend marries...
Then, so my godmother, Fergie, I've got a scrapbook at home of all the news cuttings of when she's suddenly seen photographed with a prince. Yeah.
And so did your...
So I have no connection to the royal family
other than
my friend married one.
Yes. Yeah. But then these families remained friends.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a photo, like, your sister... So Harry and William are at your sister's wedding.
That's because she married a friend of theirs. Yeah.
Right. So there's just all these random connections.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just part of your life. But once she became a princess, were you then ever traveling in that world or going to the castle or the palace or kind of seeing?
I went to a few birthday parties for Beatrice and Eugenie. And,
yeah.
And she would come and see all my shows. She's an amazing... She did... There's one production I did at college of Return to the Forbidden Planet. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And in the original, an astrologer called Patrick Moore did this voiceover. Well, at Durham University in 2002, that was Sarah Ferguson. She agreed to do that with an autocue.
She is a really good friend.
She's amazing.
That's great. Has she come Has she come to see you,
she
My Fair Lady?
She hasn't yet, but the girls have. And she hasn't. And I keep getting texts. And she tried to come, but I wasn't here. I was in England.
You're doing my podcast. Sorry.
I was right here.
The whole time.
I said, sorry.
Can't do it.
You know, priorities.
Right. So, I mean, and then just the connection that you're then on The Crown, a television show, which is, you know, that family.
Before now.
So, sorry, I digress, but it's fascinating to me. And then when Megan entered the picture, we all got even more excited again because it's like, oh, look.
Yeah.
Look, it's like Fergie from the Shop with your mom.
Yeah.
It's like a great, great thing. So when you get to college and you're cast in West Side Story, one of the most beautiful musicals ever, are you now training vocally, like taking all your natural gifts, or you're just
I never trained vocally to my dismay. I wish I had, because I tend to jut my jaw forward and strain everything. Or
but as a good
I used
belter,
to as a belter,
you,
could,
you
and,
can make it happen.
But
with
I'm
that power.
I've sort of learned at drama school. I learned, and during doing this run, I've learned a lot. I was quite growly at the beginning of the run.
Growly.
Which was just tearing it. Like, rawr.
Okay.
Like, I'm not literally growling.
Like, I know you were like, I'm very upset.
Like a lion.
Just you wait.
And I've learned to pitch it somewhere else. So it's sustainable.
And so have you been working with someone throughout the production to kind of...
No, not a physical therapist.
Yeah.
Because it's the body that really takes the toll.
Yeah.
So I see him twice a week and he, you know, looks after me, makes it possible.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it without him,
It's almost like being in an opera. I mean, you're singing so much throughout this show.
But it's not just the voice. The voice is very, very resilient, I've learned. And you wake up in the morning and go, how am I going to do this?
Right.
But it's there by the evening. But it's the rest of my body. It's the back. I'm going through a sort of physical transformation as well as a mental one. Mm-hmm. And that's puts a lot of strain on my shoulders and
right.
my back.
Right. So West Side Story, what a great starter musical.
Yeah. Like, so
to
I did
already
that,
have
and
done
then I
that
did,
part.
I did Jesus Christ Superstar, as Judas in that. And that Return to the Forbidden Planet. And then it was at college doing these musicals where I thought all the guys I really respected and thought were really hilarious were doing straight plays and the Comedy Review.
Mm.
And I wanted to be like them. So I turned down Danny Zuko in Greece, which was, this is a big crossroads for me because I'd watched it.
This is Sophie's Choice.
Yeah, this is it. I'm talking it through, realizing it at the moment.
Yeah.
And I instead took Paris in Romeo and Juliet and became part of the Durham Review, which is the Comedy Review, and took that up to Edinburgh Festival. And actually we ended up, me and my friend who played Tony, came up with a musical that we took up there, and we took it back a few years. And,
that you wrote? Or
yeah.
That,
well, he wrote it.
Yeah.
We all kind of...
Well, you can
him.
Say you
we
did.
Wrote it in a week.
I mean, he's not here.
No. Yeah, I wrote it.
I wrote it
all. And we wrote it in a week and put it up, and it won awards. And so I've been trying to balance that, the frivolity of musicals and the deep emotional journeys of straight to plays, and realizing that they're not two different things. They're, with this show, they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do both.
So when you get out of college, did you get work pretty quickly?
So after that, those 4 years, then I did drama school for three.
Okay.
So I'm not as young as you think.
Right.
So
you look amazing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So I got this job of La Vie en Rose, the film. straight whilst I was still during the holidays.
Were you at RADA or Lambda?
Was it Lambda?
Okay. Those are the two, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there are more now. At the time, there was another
one called Weber Douglas, which has since closed, and Bristol Old Vic's great, but it's out of London, and Central, and there are a lot of good places. But for me, it was my sensible side of my brain again saying, if I didn't get into one of those two, then
I won't do this.
I'm not going to bother.
Right.
It's a sign that I'm not good enough and I'll do something else. But I was very much of a place of, I have to give it a go because
life's
short and I have to do what makes
me happy.
And
was your family supportive?
Yeah. Yeah, very supportive.
So they had the opposite reaction to their
parents. Yeah, they didn't know I was going up for it. They didn't know I was auditioning.
So you told them after?
I told them once I got in.
Now, are your grandparents alive when you're growing up?
Yeah.
And are they alive when this is all happening?
Some of them. I have one remaining grandmother who's 94 or 5, and she hasn't made it over, sadly. But
I was like, yes, she has.
She'll get this. Hi, Granny.
She walks in. This is your life.
Oh, don't be too much.
So was there any conversation? Because here is this generational thing where the generation before was not allowed to pursue this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't appropriate for this family.
Oh, they love it.
And now they're full stop. Okay.
They love it.
Okay.
Times have changed.
Got it.
You know, you've got to sort of, and everything's evolving. And
they evolved with it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a very conscious decision to become an actor, to try and be the best actor there is.
And if I'm not doing that,
I dedicated myself to it and I've worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made some tough choices, but that's frustratingly the only power you have in this job is the power to say no.
I know, it's so crazy.
So I've made some tough decisions and
meaning starved. Sort of like, I'm not going to do that because that's taking me away from sort of...
Yeah.
And what was
the
goal? Like if you said
no to
something...
The goal for me was to do the theatres that I had grown to love in London. The Donmar, the Royal Court, the National... and only do them, and only do something that will propel me onto another one of those jobs.
Right.
And
do you feel like you were ambitious? Would you describe yourself?
Yeah, I am ambitious, but I'm. I think I'm a good balance of pragmatic as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned quite quickly, so I did. And it's about the role. Penelope Wilton. I did one of my first jobs out of drama school. I did Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet in a small studio production, and after that, The Importance of Being Earnest, and I sort of got nominated for a classical text award along with Tom Hiddleston, Rory Kinnear, Andrea Riseborough.
They're all terrible.
Carey Mulligan.
Terribly untalented
people.
All of us
under 30.
I feel sorry for all of them.
Yeah.
None of them have gone on.
Whatever happened to them?
Carey, it just can't get a break.
No.
Sorry.
I know, it's tough.
Tom.
So at some stage, you just got to realize it's not going to happen.
Give it up.
Yeah, right. But she, I remember she said it's about the part. When she was handing out, she said it's about the part and the best part.
And the writing
isn't always the lead role.
Right.
And I sort of learned that I've learned lots of things and I've worked with lots of amazing directors who have different approaches.
Yeah.
So the training has continued.
But those takeaways, right? Like things people say early on in passing that end up being like touchstones.
And I think about it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asks, what about this role? And I've drawn on Peter Gill, who did The Importance of Being Earnest, was all about pace. Gaddy Roll, who was all about units.
What does that mean?
It means you find out what he will split a script into beats and units and draw a line in the script of this is where you're working to. Essentially, this is where there is a pause or a change of thought and you need to hit it. You need to get to that point and earn the pause.
So you're, when you think about your technique or your craft, do you sort of apply these things to all the texts, like regardless of whether it's comedy or film or
yeah, I mean, so with theater, I enjoy the technicality.
And there's time. I mean, in these other jobs, we get the call on Tuesday and you're in on Thursday. So it's a different prep.
And then there's a director with Lindsay Turner who did that show with Carey over here recently, Boys and Girls.
Yeah.
And she has a different approach, which is more like you put yourself in a goldfish bowl, which is why I spend most of the show with my back to the audience. And I'm not afraid of that.
That's interesting.
It's fun. And because you don't necessarily want to show them everything.
Right. And in real life, we don't see everything.
In real life, we don't everything. And in theatre, as you say, you can do that. I did with The Crown, funnily enough, I did a lot of work. You know,
you had some time.
Had some time
from getting cast to Dave shooting. Yeah. Did you audition for that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Twice. For different roles. And I got this one.
Great. Like, which you hadn't even read before, or you
all
did.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, okay. He was a king. He becomes the king.
Yeah, right. Remember that's the thing I remember.
I'm sorry. No, this is great.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I remember the first day, I had done a lot of prep on the voice, on the posture, on everything.
And it's a real person.
He's
so
a real
you can
person.
Look
there's,
him up.
There's,
yeah.
There's interviews. And we did it. And then suddenly I was in South Africa with Stephen Daldry doing a much more theatre feeling process. And we were improvising around the scenes. When you work with Stephen, it's incredibly
even
collaborative.
On camera.
Even on camera. And suddenly you're improvising dialogue and suddenly all the choices you've made for that one line that you think you can get away with because it's only a line have gone.
Yeah. And the writers are crying in the corner because they actually worked very painstakingly
to
write.
And you realize, oh, right, okay, I have to be this person as opposed to just mimic someone.
That's right. But also that's all that research. I mean, I think with everything, it's like, had you not done that, the confidence to leave that all behind.
Yeah.
Like that work doesn't need to walk on stage with you or it's in you.
It's there.
Right.
It's there.
Like I spend 70 hours watching you and you know, looking at your work and reading interviews. I don't have a single note here.
Yeah.
But it's
there.
And later I'll cry because I forgot some things. But that's what it is, right? To try to like have it be in you and to know that he's doing that on that level when the money involved and the time involved and we're losing the light and still to let you play in
confidence.
That way. Who does? That's incredible. That's Stephen Daldry.
That's Stephen Daldry.
Yeah.
And that's...
Roger Daltrey.
No.
Stephen.
That's a very different.
Very different.
Yeah.
He's also confident.
Correct. I wouldn't put him with a camera.
No. But I would love to hear him sing the Tommy soundtrack right now.
Exactly.
So I can't believe you did Lovey and Rose so early.
Yeah. I had to lie. I remember getting there and saying, so what have you done recently? Mm-hmm. And I was like, nothing. It's my first job.
Yeah.
And they...
Are you familiar with Spunk?
And they went, no. You can't say that. I think
did you have an agent when you left drama school?
Yeah.
So that worked out. You were represented. They got you that audition.
Because that was the other thing. I wanted to give myself the best chance of getting an agent. Mm-hmm. So that was a reason to go to Rod or Lambda because they come to see that. I got an agent straight away who I'm still with and I love. And
were those auditions in London for Lovey and Rose?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was my first audition with a camera.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had to... suddenly improvise in French and sort of introduce myself to camera in French. And that gave me the leg up. And also, by some freak coincidence, I think I look like the guy.
Right, which is...
which I have no control over.
Right,
so,
that's fantastic.
That was helpful.
So is it just you and the casting director at first?
Yeah.
Right, and you do it. And
was
then...
it? There wasn't
no
a
callbacks.
Recall, that was it.
No chemistry read.
No.
With you and Edith Piaf.
No, me and Oscar-winning Marion Cotillard. No. Yeah.
And so are you speaking French with her? Like, did you feel like you had to keep it going?
Because she was trying to learn English as well. And I was playing an American speaking French,
which I
don't think anyone else could do.
No. Well, do you have an American accent that you do?
I do. It requires work, so I'm not going to just jump into it.
Yeah. No, that's all right. But do it.
No.
That's okay. Do it.
But I, yeah. It's there.
did you lie and say you were an American who spoke French? When you say you lied.
I lied about how much experience I'd had.
As an actor.
As an actor.
Not that you hadn't.
I think they didn't know it was my first job.
Got it.
And I cried when my agent rang me up and told me, this is, you're going to get £2,000 or something. Like, really? But I was like, that's more money than I've ever heard of.
Right.
Yeah.
For, as an actor.
Yeah.
Did that, where did that shoot?
In Prague.
In
and
Prague.
Paris.
So it wasn't a soundstage.
So
you were on location.
It was on location. There was a soundstage in Prague, but we were on location in Paris in real old brasseries with sort of Freedom Air, the fish platters in front of us going moldy with flies all over them. And everyone
really,
smoking on set.
Great. Very romantic.
Like, cut. The director would cut and everyone would pull out their cigarettes and smoke. And
well, that's what it was in Prague.
My jaw was on the floor.
Can you talk a little bit about watching her? I mean, there are a couple of performances. I think of her as Edith Piaf. I think of Philip Seymour Hoffman as Capote. Like these people who are on film, not on stage, but on film, are transforming into these people that are iconic. So we're looking with great knowledge of who these real people were. Can you talk a little bit about what she was?
Yeah, I mean, I saw her quite late in Edith Piaf's life was when my part of the story
was. Right, when she's an older person.
And I'm hearing stuff at drama school about, oh, it's very different on film. It's much different. You've got to do nothing and you just don't show anything and hardly move.
Yeah.
And then she comes along and hunched over doing this very physical
Characterization.
And I have my acting teacher at drama school's voice in my head saying, oh, it's a bit gothic, you know. But it was a real lesson in no, if you're committed to it,
you can do it, and
you can do whatever you like.
Yeah.
And the camera can pick it up as long as you're within frame. And I think she was, it was incredible performance from the heart and technically. And I learned a lot just sort of watching and I'm very naive in it. And you can tell I'm just reacting to what's there.
You're in the moment.
And she's amazing.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary performance.
It's an incredible lesson that you don't just, there's no difference between acting on film or on theatre. It's about volume, really. It's about expanse.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The thoughts are the same.
Right. It's like, am I hitting the last row of the theater? Or am I just doing it for the camera? It's about distance, really, more than performance.
And I think they're both very important. I pride myself on being able to hit the back row. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I've ever been mic'd in my life doing this show. But people have paid a lot of money to come and see you, and you need to be able to get there.
So I'm gonna jump forward to this iconic part that you're doing now. You know, others have played it before on film and on stage, and the idea that you can come in unknown to most American audiences in the musical theater world and make it so your own and be celebrated so quickly for it. Can you talk a little bit, Bartlett Sher has also a kind of really extraordinary reputation. Kelly O'Hara, I've had a lot of people sitting where you're sitting talking about their relationship with him.
Yeah.
She in particular has like a real,
they're
a real theater couple in that way.
Oh, lovely.
Not romantic, we think of them together a lot because they've done a lot of stuff together. Yes. Did you audition for this in London or here?
So yeah, I got the audition. My agent said, do you want to do it? And I said no, because they'll just give it to an older person.
Is this your first Broadway or West End musical audition?
Yeah.
So you hadn't been auditioning for musicals?
In London. I'd done a few workshops. And that's sort of how I got in the room.
Okay.
Because friends of Bart's had seen me doing...
Got it.
I did a workshop for... Julian Fellowes did Wind in the Willows. I did a workshop for that, and that had a showing.
Got it.
And also the Maid in Dagenham musical that Rupert Gould did.
So that's why. That's why you're on this list suddenly.
I'm on the list because people have seen me do that.
Okay.
And then I've not done the productions.
Because?
B- Because the difficult choices.
Right. What and, we were talking about before.
Like,
oh. Harry just
shrunk.
Harry just put his, like, touched something on his chair and he became adorable.
Yeah. Well, they're a child.
He was seven years old. Well, that's what happens when we make choices.
Yeah. Yes.
We get small or
we
big.
Get small.
Yeah. And, so you didn't go on with them because they weren't the right fit.
I think there's a part of me that knew there was a musical that could help me, could mm-hmm. be the making of me, and it had to be the right one because you might only get one shot at it. So my agent.
And you're not throwing away your shot.
No, I'm not. No, no way. I get that reference.
Have you heard of Hamilton?
I've heard of it. I saw it in preparation for this role.
Good.
Yeah, really helped. I did.
They're like the same guy.
I went to see Book of Mormon and Hamilton because I thought I'd better refresh myself.
Well, what is a musical?
What is a musical?
There you go.
And they all made it look really easy.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. But you don't have to tap dance. You don't have to tap dance.
No, that's true.
But you do have to do everything else.
I do.
So anyway, you decide you're going to wait for the right one, and then this comes along.
This comes along, and I say no because there's no chance I'll get it. I'll do all the work, and they'll give it to Colin Firth or, mm-hmm. you know. My agent says, well, I think they're thinking someone younger maybe, so just go in and give it a go. So I go in kind of, you know, not expecting anything.
But worked really hard.
I got a singing teacher, and I learned the melodies of all the two songs they gave me.
So they wanted you to sing from the show when you came in.
They wanted me to prepare a verse and a chorus of Ordinary Man and the same for I've Grown Accustomed.
Did you love the songs right away?
Yeah. I mean, I was scared of them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're just repetitive and tricky.
Yeah.
But I learned the melodies and thought, well, I'm just going to do the melodies. And I got in the room and...
Do you bring your own pianist?
There's a pianist there.
Okay,
there's
so now you're not doing it with your teacher. There's a new guy.
Bart has an assistant. There's a cameraman. there's a few other people in the room. I don't know what they're doing there, but they're there.
They're there to judge.
There's
That's what they're doing.
To read with me. And Bart says, go. And I get one line out and he goes, no, stop, do it like this. No, stop doing it like this.
Do you remember what some of those ideas were?
No.
You are passing out at this point.
I have no idea. All I know is that whatever I went in with was not what it was going to be.
Huh.
But what happened as we started sparking off each other was that it felt like a rehearsal.
I love that.
And we worked that first scene in Covent Garden over and over, and it felt actually like he was using me for ideas as much as I was using him. And
right.
we were...
But you understood
we
what he was asking.
We were creating something, and I was... you know, hopefully taking his direction, trying stuff out, and he was trying stuff out. And we worked on that for half an hour, and then at the end he just said, right, sing a song, and I sang a song, and that wasn't it, actually. What happened next was he said, okay, can everyone leave the room? At which point I got even
That's
sweatier.
Weird.
And he said, come and sit down. And he said, can we turn the camera off? And I'm going, okay, what's happening now? Because this has never happened before. And he laid it out to me, what this was, what this role meant. Sorry.
I told you, everybody cries in here.
It's so
just
weird.
A matter of time. What are you, what
he
is
said
that?
It hadn't been done for 25 years.
Yeah.
This is kind of a big deal. And I just hadn't prepared myself for it in any way. I was just like... Well, the less I know about this, the better. And that's mm-hmm. in general mm-hmm. how I feel about going into something. If I'm too prepared, then I get scared of it.
Right.
But he said, this is kind of a big deal. It hasn't been done for 25 years. I think this could work, but it's not only my decision. He said, it's going to be easier if I have the estates of Lerner and Lowe and the Lincoln Center Theatre all... agreeing with me.
Right.
So we're going to need to fly you over to New York and audition there. And still in my head, I'm going, well, This sounds like a free trip to New York. Amazing.
I want to see Mormon and Hamilton.
Yeah, I want to, exactly. I want, this sounds time away from my young children.
Babies.
And
I'm going to sleep in and watch TV.
And maybe I'll fly business and it'll be dreamy. So I go and see that night, or the following night, I go and see a preview of Oslo at the National Theatre.
Yeah.
And we meet for a drink, and JT Rogers is there, and another producer friend who turns out is a mutual friend of mine and Bart's. Hmm. And JT Rogers is saying, Bart's been telling me all about you. He's been showing me
Not your audition tape,
but my showreel. I think it's hilarious. And I'm okay, so he's talking about me. And
wow.
And one of them said, you know, he's telling people he's found his Higgins.
How come you're not crying now?
I don't know. I'm too tired. But then I get on a plane. Then I get...
How long after? Is there some time?
There's a month or so.
Okay.
To prepare and get nervous for the audition.
But
I think I've got it. And then I get in line for the check-in at the airport, and there's a considerably more famous actor in the line in front of me with a suitcase.
Now, can you tell us who that is?
He probably wouldn't want me to say.
Okay.
But, a big admirer of his work.
Colin Firth.
No. Someone of a similar age to me.
Yeah.
They'd made that decision, I think.
And they flew you over together?
They flew us together.
Were you sitting next
with
to each other?
We were behind each other with the scripts.
That's so sad. And, I want to see that movie.
And, you know, and at immigration, they're going, well, what have you done? Like, how are you here on this?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, I did a little TV thing, and he's naming the movies he's done.
Right.
Anyway, perfect. So we realized.
You laughed.
I think we both probably thought, well, this is in the bag, and we realized, okay, we have to work for it. And
right.
We sent each other texts. And then there was a third guy again.
Colin Firth.
No. not Colin, but
Hugh.
Similarly, someone you would have heard
Hugh.
Of.
Okay.
And he was walking towards me as I walked towards the audition on this long corridor.
That one, the third guy.
The third guy.
Okay. So you're like, they're everywhere.
I didn't know he was going in for it either.
Right. So just as an actor, because many people who listen to this episode are also actors, do you have like a thing that you do to arm yourself? When you see, to call it competition we're all here to support each other, but only one person can get the job. And when you see people that you admire, like I immediately cast them. I walk into the room and I'm like, oh my God, you guys have to cast Laura or whoever.
Yeah.
Like, that's my thing. I'm going to go to the other side of the table and cast it with them because everyone out there is amazing in the waiting room. How do you prepare for those moments or how do you deal with it?
I find the excuse, I think. I knew he's, both of them are amazing actors, but I knew were very different.
Right.
And
so you protect yourself with like, they can't
If they don't give it to me, it's because
he's
doing something very different to what I would do with it. And they want that one. And that's fine.
Yep.
That's not because I'm bad.
And it's true.
It's not because I'm bad. It's because they've gone with something different.
Right.
And that's it. And I prepare myself for the audition by just being more, I always try and be more prepared than anyone else would be. So in my head, if I think I've gone to lunatic levels of preparation, then I think I'm in a good place.
Yeah.
And then I can forget about it.
And when you go in, so then it's Andre Bishop and the Lincoln Center Theater family.
Oh, there are almost 20 of them at a long table. And someone I'd never heard of called Lauren Ambrose sitting there with a script.
So you're coming in and you're reading with her.
Yeah.
And right away, she's magical.
Yeah.
She's a unicorn person. Yeah. A beautiful person inside and out. I did my very first play in New York with her. She played my little sister. And so I feel like just a sense of pride, true pride. Did it go well? Did you leave that room feeling like whatever happens, I did what I wanted to do?
Yes. And I went into the room. So I broke the ice. There was a chair in the middle of the room. And I was like, well, no, I've learnt both these scenes inside out. And I'd learnt both songs. Why am I going to sit? He wouldn't be sitting. So I said, can I move the chair? It was obviously from the previous auditionee. And they went, yeah. And as I turned, I went, lazy. in a sort of Ricky Gervais
yes.
thing, which I know, helped but if you break can
make
the ice.
Them laugh, it's yeah. so great. And then everyone's happier.
And Bart had said, listen, I might redirect you in the room, and that's fine, and that's normal.
Right.
And then he didn't.
Right.
And I was like, okay, that's he's happy with that.
We're all good.
We're good.
And so how long was it till
well,
he found out?
Well, then he said, just wait outside the room. I was the third to go in.
Great.
Just wait outside the room. So I waited outside the room, thinking, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. And he comes out, and he goes, well done.
No.
We'll let you know.
No. Yeah. Why don't you take a sword and shove yeah. it into my heart? And
okay.
then.
Okay, great.
Then you have to find the elevator and go
so
back
I
up.
So I go back yeah. to my, I get back to my hotel room and undress and get into bed because I hadn't slept because right. of jet lag and nerves. I just was weird.
It's a lot.
I was
yeah.
weird. And then my agent rings. It was 20 minutes afterwards. I'm in bed. My agent rings and says, it's mine. And my first thought is, how am I going to tell my wife?
Yeah, who's an actress
who's
also.
Who's an actress as well.
Yeah.
And
that we're coming to New York.
That we're coming to New York and we're all coming and yeah.
How long was the contract for?
Till about a week ago.
So a year?
A year. No. It was originally till January the 6th.
But how, so not knowing time, was it a 6-month contract, a year
yes,
contract?
Yes, so I guess it was about 6 months
so
from,
that's
from
what,
opening.
Right.
Till September was the first time I could get out. And we opened in April. And then the contract went up till January. And then they prolonged it. They very kindly let me go and do the Downton Abbey movie.
I was going to ask.
So they added a month on.
If Birdie...
he's around.
Is or if they're still...
No car crashes for Birdie.
Of course. Yeah. There's car crashes, not for Birdie. I'm sure someone will die because Julian can't help himself.
Yeah.
What a special thing for you to get the thing we want. There are things that happen that are surprises, and they happened anyway, yeah. or they're offers. But when you have this thing of working so hard and you get it from that kind of work,
yeah.
it's all the more special because
it exactly.
wasn't, you weren't cavalier about it.
And what happens a lot of the time is you do the work and they make the other choice. They go, well,
right.
I can see you can do it, but we're not doing that production.
Yeah.
We're doing this production.
And yeah, you're like, can I get my audition tape? It seemed good.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Just have it.
And thankfully, this production is quite, in many ways, quite a traditional one. And they're not doing anything too crazy with it. You know, we've obviously, when you do a revival, you want to make it, right
special.
For the time
yeah.
and appropriate. And we've done that, but that was what my version was aligned with this production and Michael Jurgens' design and everything.
Yeah. And now Danny Burstein,
yeah.
who I love, has taken
who
over
doesn't?
For Norbert
yeah.
Leo Betts. He's just
he's divine.
One of the most lovely humans on
That's
the planet.
Right. Yeah.
Laura, you know, Benanti is Broadway royalty.
Yeah.
And as you know, it was a part that it's that lesson, right? Like
yeah.
she had to, there was a moment where it was on her radar
yeah.
and it wasn't the right time. And just the kind of symmetry and the way the world works that she
mm-hmm.
could come in. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, as a replacement cast go, this is pretty darn glorious for you guys.
It's amazing.
I'm sure.
And Rosemary Harris as well.
Oh, my goodness. I was thinking of like, you know, if I could get her in here, like where do you, you know, talk about how would I truncate that bio? Like,
no,
I'm sorry, tell
don't.
Me a little bit about Laurence Olivier
yeah.
and Richard Burton, like it's
and
just.
Peter O'Toole. How
let's
was it
just go through that.
Ophelia to
was Gilgood fun?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you enjoy Gilgood?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, do you really?
I was reading some Noel Coward plays recently with a view to maybe doing them at some stage. And she went, oh, lovely. Noel was lovely.
He was such fun.
He was such fun. An awful corpse. You know.
Gosh, what a thing. And then just because I can't, I mean, first of all, you're in it for another, for
I'm
how long?
I'm going to July.
July of 2019.
This year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's an extraordinary thing to get to do it for so long, to get to go away and come back to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. if being nominated or being a part of the Olivier Awards is as shiny as it is to be nominated. I mean, I can only imagine that it's thrilling. But there is something for American theater actors. The Tony, we grow up watching the Tonys.
You guys do all this stuff.
We love it.
Amazingly well as well.
We just pay tribute to Broadway actors in a way that I think is right. But getting the call or finding out you're nominated is a really big deal.
Yeah.
So where were you? How did you find out? I'm sure there was like energy around it, which makes it even, I've had so many friends say, it makes it worse because everyone's expecting you to be nominated. It's not like a private little joy.
There are lots of other awards in the run-up to
leading,
it.
Exactly.
So you kind of...
you're on this...
You work out what the playing field looks like little bit.
Yes. And that had all been happening previous to the Tony noms.
So, weirdly, you know, I'd sort of got to a position of this is a possibility and I'd be disappointed if it doesn't happen now, but I must prepare myself for that, you know.
Yeah. You must feel very welcome here.
I do. It's extraordinary. And I've said this many times, but it's like the difference for me from working in the West End to working on Broadway is unfathomable. Is the welcome we've had as a family has been extraordinary, and the support of theatre in this place is completely magical.
And working at the Lincoln Center Theatre, the way in which every single person there, from the press office, who are you know, who brought you here today, and prop, like from press to props to, you know, the union guys who run that theater to, like, every single person. It's a
my
huge
dresser.
Yeah.
Who knew I needed a dresser?
Is that not a West End thing?
I think I've had one once before at the National Theater, but it was more a case of...
So unless you have 32 costume changes, you're on your own.
Yeah, but the role of a dresser...
Is your friend.
Is my friend... Is, as far as I can tell, to make sure I get on stage.
Right.
And I'm fit. And I'm doing
hydrated.
The work. I'm hydrated. That's what he said.
Yes.
Harry got to hydrate, Harry.
Yeah. what is your dresser's name?
He's called Jeffrey Polischuk. He's
to
he's,
Jeffrey.
He's the mayor of Broadway. And
he's done it a long time.
He's just done Clive Owen. And before that was Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman. So he
we
knows.
Trust him with our finest actors. And I bet he makes a damn good cup of tea.
He does, eventually.
everyone likes their tea differently.
Yeah. You know, it's more you're more of a coffee drinking nation over
we
here.
We are. How do you take your tea?
White.
And do you?
But I've become more of a coffee drinker.
Right.
Funnily enough.
Right. Well, there's a Starbucks every 2 inches.
Because it's hard to get the right tea bags.
Really.
But I couldn't do it without. I could not do the show without. Jeffrey, or without the support of everyone in the theater. It's extraordinary.
When Danny and Lark came in, obviously at different times, and Rosemary, did you guys rehearse again, or did they get rehearsed in with stage management and Bart, and then you guys do some run-throughs?
So what happened, what was crazy and unfortunate in many ways, is Downton Abbey came along and was initially for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then it became 4 weeks.
I guess Bertie has a lot to do.
Well, I don't know. No spoilers.
I can't wait to see Little Birdie. That's all I'm hoping. Marigold needs a brother.
Oh, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. But what happened, unfortunately, was that the 4 weeks needed happened to be exactly Lauren's final 4 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So Lauren and my final performance, which was very emotional, was 4 weeks before she ended.
Right.
So I left. And in those 4 weeks, I was in the UK. Laura started rehearsing again with stage management downstairs. I didn't even get back in time to say goodbye to Lauren. I flew back on the Monday. The Tuesday afternoon, I have a put-in rehearsal with Laura, who I met then.
Wow.
And that Tuesday night was her first performance.
That's insane.
And my first performance
in four weeks. That's insane.
Yeah.
I wish I'd been at that performance because I bet it was so alive
it was
and
alive.
Amazing.
It was alive.
Because...
No one has ever listened to anyone else quite as hard.
Did she say Rain in Spain? I swear I think she said Rain in Spain.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then...
And then you're singing, I've grown accustomed to her, and it's like a new face, and you're like, where am I?
Yeah. Over the last 2 hours, I've grown accustomed to her face. Yeah, that's it.
It's a good face.
It's a good face. And I've got used to it now, weirdly. So that was it. And so for the first week or so, it was just, we were surviving on adrenaline. And Bart's a busy man as well. He was opening...
everything.
Firstly, he was opening The King and I at the Palladium when I came back.
Right.
And then To Kill a Mockingbird. So getting him in the room was tricky.
So he has been able at some point to come in and give some notes and talk to you guys.
But we're like, you know,
well, I saw it with you recently again. Mm. Excuse me. And Laura, and I felt like it felt like an original cast.
Great.
So from an audience perspective, it's just incredible. Well, I've grown accustomed to your face over the last hour, and... That was an actual spit take you just did. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I like to make them laugh and then have water come out of their nose. Harry, it is such a pleasure to get to know you and
too.
Get to see your work. And I'm sure you will be here for a while. And
fingers crossed if they'll have us.
Yeah.
They don't make it easy now.
Yeah. Well, you're here. You're an honorary American.
Yeah.
And I really look forward to us speaking again soon in the future. But thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. We did it.
Yay.
Thank you so much. That was
Thank
so
you.
Much fun.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast. And on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.